give up, don't allow disaster. Don't you give up, don't you let away. Talking about a forever after. Don't you give up, don't you dare give in. Don't you give up, don't you dare give in.
Greetings, this is Jack Tuckner. And I'm here with Deborah Orell, my very own Robin Quivers, and we're joining you for the premiere show of Women's Rights in the Workplace, where we'll be taking your questions each week and speaking with fascinating guests and addressing questions that everybody wants to know, and most people don't know because we don't tell folks about your rights in the workplace. What are your rights as an employee, particularly with an emphasis on gender issues, with an emphasis on women's concerns, such as pregnancy discrimination, maternity leave? How many of our listeners have any idea what your rights are with regard to maternity leave when the time comes and your child is born? Will they have to give you time off? And this answer is probably not as simple as you might think. How much time do you get? How to best protect yourself? How best to ask for that time and declare for yourself? And we'll be addressing all kinds of other issues with regard to labor and employment. What happens if you feel that as a woman, of course, this could happen to any gender in the workplace. If you are sexually harassed, if you find yourself in a position where typically, your supervisor or someone above you in the corporate food chain, if you will, is subjecting you to unwelcome, unsolicited, and unwanted sexual advances or just sexual energy, even if it's just in flirtation or some type of, you know, otherwise apparently innocuous behavior that you find troubling and that you find it makes you uncomfortable. And as an employee, you do not have to allow that to continue. But how do you deal with it? Do you simply say no to the aggressor and the harasser? Do you complain? How do you complain? We'll be dealing with all of these issues and your questions and a lot more in our labor and employment. And we are workers' rights lawyers and activists. And so any questions or concerns related to what's really been, again, a fast diminishing right that we used to have more in this country to employment, to a living wage, to a union job that provides a certain threshold of dignity and, you know, a backstop so that, you know, we're not all, it's not a race to the bottom to see who can make less and have less benefits. And we'll talk about all these issues, health care, et cetera. But today we wanted to start the show, our premier show, talking about an important issue to all of us, because if you're not a woman of childbearing age that has dealt with the issue of the intersection of your maternity and your career and what that does to and women and even significant others of women who are listening to this who have been through this will understand how challenging that could be when you're sort of chugging right along with a career that seems to be going well and you're working hard and you're kicking butt and taking names, and suddenly you're pregnant and your employer and your company views you differently. It's obvious. Things are different. You are the first trimester, perhaps, you're struggling with morning sickness. And you cannot be at your desk at 8 o'clock every day. And you might, in fact, not be able to commute on the very same rush hour trains as you used to because you're queasy. And perhaps you need a number of breaks to ingest something to keep your blood sugar where it needs to be. Drinking water. Thank you, Deborah. Excuse me while I have some. And so all of these questions that arise, so during your pregnancy, you will undoubtedly need to visit your OBGYN during your pregnancy. By the time you're in your second trimester, you will have appointments. You might have sonograms, etc. There will be issues. And you will expect your employer to be flexible, but most and many employers are not. So what are your rights with regard to that? And that is, again, an important issue because many of our clients, many women who have jobs when they are pregnant, they find themselves in a diminished state. They find themselves, you know, suddenly on the outside looking in for whatever reason. They can't go out anymore and drink with the clients and schmooze. They can't travel as much. They can't fly, perhaps. So their employer tends to see them as a little bit damaged goods. Your utility is diminished. You can't work 18 hours a day during this period of time. So you're not earning your worth. And in corporations where profit is king, and that's all that matters, your employer might be a dysfunctional family away from your other dysfunctional family in a lot of other regards, but, you know, they don't feel, and the law doesn't generally require them to treat you as if you are a family member in need of compassion and flexibility. But we'll talk about all of those things. So let's jump right in, Deborah, and talk today about what would you say in our Women's Rights in the Law Office, you know, in terms of phone calls that deal with pregnancy discrimination, what is the most common question that we're confronted with on a daily basis for women who are challenged with pregnancy-based issues?
Well, I think it's on two different levels. Hourly wage workers and those types of issues and limitations, and salaried people, that would seem to me to be the distinction to what you're even bringing up. So they cut my hours. So just when everything's going along fine, somebody works somewhere, they work 40 hours a week, everything is fine, their reviews, etc. They then tell their supervisor they're pregnant. And all of a sudden, there seems to be a shift. And that's the big question. I feel they're not feeding me leads because I'm less than. They cut my hours. They're saying I can't do this job. And the wage people, the salaried people, you know, women, it tends to be a little bit more subtle in the how they're approached. That they aren't the number one salesperson anymore for right now. They are being looked at very differently. Because let's face it, when all of a sudden you're pregnant and you're, you know, you may not feel as well, and even if you do, you're still, you know, baking a baby in there, and there is a difference in how people look at you, men and women.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that subtle difference. So when women call, they're either at that, I feel something is happening here, or the very clear, I used to work 40 hours and now they've cut my hours to 22. They're picking on me for everything. They want me out of here now. How do I protect myself? So both are the same issue.
Okay, thank you. Well, you know what? First of all, I just want to give our call-in number. If anyone wants to call in with any question throughout the show, give us a call at 888-874-4888. Once again, that's 888-874-4888. Let me just start with a little bit of background on employment discrimination. Before we get to some of these specifics, what are your rights in the workplace?
You know, I just want to say, if you ask what is the number one call, what I spend most of the day answering is people saying, I was wrongfully terminated. And then there's the whole list of reasons that they give for and whatever they are, but I was wrongfully terminated. And I spend much of my day educating people that most of the laws do not protect, there are very few laws that protect employees, and that as immoral, wrong, unprofessional, hurtful, damaging, whatever they've done to you, it's basically legal.
Right.
That is the number one phone call.
Right. And that's the rub. And that's where we're starting here, because most people wouldn't probably guess that you have no rights in the workplace. You have no rights to continued employment. You don't have a right not to be, generally speaking, bullied. You don't have a right not to be yelled at. You don't have a right to work free from a so-called hostile work environment. A lot of people throw that term around, right? They say, oh, it's a hostile work environment. You know what? It's allowed to be hostile. It could be outrageously hostile. In fact, many corporations encourage hostile work environments. That's not illegal. You can be screamed at and cursed at all day long. The only rule is, the only law is, with, at least with regard to hostility, is that it can't be a hostile work environment, a severely hostile work environment, if it's hostile because of something about you that one of the laws protects, either federal law, United States law, or your state's law, or your city's law. But generally speaking, the federal laws, which most state laws track with some exceptions, are those protected categories are generally race, color, ethnicity, national origin, age, religion, disability, gender. Gender, actually, under federal law, it's sex, and under certain state laws, such as New York, where we practice it, and New York City, the term is gender as opposed to sex, but it comes down to essentially the same thing. That if your work environment...
And sexual orientation.
Well, and sexual orientation, thank you, although not under federal law yet, believe it or not. But if you're... If you believe that you're being treated differently at work, that the terms or the conditions of your employment or the benefits or the privileges of your employment for this company or the pay even of your employment is different for you, is degraded for you because you're being treated differently, because you're a person of color or because you're gay or because you're over 40 or because you spurned your manager's overtures for sex or because you notified your company that you're pregnant. And now they know, oh boy, some point in the next 9 months, we're going to have to do without this person for at least 3 months. It's a pain. Employers tend to resent that. They can't fire you during that period of time, generally speaking, but they have to cover for you, etc. So they see you home, they're picturing you home, watching HBO on demand, having a baby, eating your bonbons, when they have to deal with your essential functions of your position and then wait for you to come back. And just from our experience, we see often there is a certain amount of resentment and sort of countervailing forces, you know, some backlash that attends women. It's like, you know what? Have a baby on your own time. Mm. You want to make money? You want to work for us here? Have a baby. You know, pick a lane. And it's very difficult, particularly second pregnancies, which we'll probably do a whole show on, is a second pregnancy for the same employer when they sort of tend to be more or less back-to-back.
Less tolerant.
They're less tolerant by the time you have your second one, you know, on the heels of your first one. It's like, didn't you just have an FMLA leave? Well, you know, so there are other issues that we'll talk about that another time. But back to what your rights are, unless you have a contract of employment, and very few of us do. If you could command a contract, a binding several-year contract of employment, you know, good for you. That's great. And most of you probably don't have a contract of employment unless you are a very highly paid financial services person or an entertainer or an athlete. Most of us work at the whim of our company. And, in fact, there's a term for that that's similar. It's called an at-will employee. We work at the will, at the whim, frankly, of our corporate master. And that's, in fact, the legal analysis under the law is master-servant. The corporation is the master, and we are the servants. They say jump, we say how high. That's it. It's not a democracy.
They can change your job description. You know, list out some of those things. You could be making $40,000. They could come to you and say, we think this job is only worth $20,000. Take it or leave it. That they're allowed to do.
They're allowed to do that. They could fire you on Christmas Eve while the Christmas party is a-raging, and they pull you out and sit you down and tell you to put your champagne flute down because they have something to tell you. And what they have to tell you is, we're sorry, we're letting you go. I know you've worked here for 22 years. It's been a natural high, as Deborah often says, and we're going to have Leroy, the security guard, escort you out and try to stop crying now. I'll give you a few minutes to get you, pull yourself together, because when we walk you out, and we will walk you out, we can't have you stopping at your computer and doing God knows what to our server. When Leroy, the security guard, escorts you out onto 7th Avenue, we don't want people to think that you are being arrested and like a perp walk out the door. So get yourself together and leave. You know what? It happens every day. It's not illegal.
Notice, no reason, no severance, no
No notice,
nothing.
No reason, no severance.
And they
nada.
Can make up a lie. They could say you stole merchandise.
Right. And it doesn't matter that it's
and
a lie.
Right.
It doesn't matter that you have an alibi. It's not a criminal case. We're the ones, the employee has to allege that, you know what, this termination or the way you're treating me before the termination is illegal. It's not that it's wrongful. In fact, there's no such thing. People call every day and say, I was wrongfully terminated. Well, there's essentially no such claim in court as wrongful termination. It is essentially discrimination is what we have. And if it's not discriminatory, i.e., if you're not being treated differently because you're black, because you're gay, because you're old, because you're a Jew, because you're a Muslim, because you didn't have sex with your boss, because you're pregnant, or something along those lines that has to do with a protected category or activity or status or something about you that you can change, an immutable characteristic about yourself. Those are the categories that we deem, the society deems important enough, at least important enough to generate a certain amount of protection so that you have
to... Those are your civil rights.
Those are your civil rights. In fact, under federal law, it is the Civil Rights Act of 1964, as it was amended in 1991. That is the law. It's also known as Title VII. That's our federal law that protects all of us when our employer has at least 15 employees. If your employer does not have 15 employees, under federal law, you're just simply not covered. No matter what your employer does to you, your boss can ask you for sexual favors on the job, and you can capture it on audio tape. And if there are 10 employees in the company, there's no cause of action under federal law. There's no filing with the United States Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. There's no lawsuit in federal court. As terrible as that seems, that's the way it is. Again, we have to write to our Congress people if we want that changed. Under state law, so for instance, I am an attorney in New York State and in Connecticut, and we also practice in New Jersey, and in those states, at least in New York and Connecticut, only 4 employees are needed on an employer's payroll to catalyze that coverage, meaning that if you work for a little company that has 4 employees or more, you are covered at least under New York law, Connecticut law, under New Jersey law. And again, you could check most states have laws, human rights laws, that protect you from employment discrimination.
Isn't New Jersey 1 or 2?
And Jersey is 1.
Right.
Thank you. But, you know, less than.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one at my job.
You play one on the radio. And... So that's good news, although, again, the bad news of that is if you work for a doctor, a lawyer, a chiropractor, or some small mom-and-pop type of shop that has 2 or 3 employees, doesn't matter how bad it is. There may be things to do, but you won't be covered under most laws if the employer doesn't have a certain threshold number of employees, and that's important to understand. And while we're talking about that, let me just talk about now the FMLA.
Wait a minute. Before you go into
sure.
that, just finish... In that, so there's federal, there's state, and then many cities have further protections.
That's true.
So as an example.
Well, as an example, New York City has a human rights law, which is the best, one of the most progressive and comprehensive and liberal employee-oriented laws in the whole country. It is deemed... Again, the most liberal, it requires juries and judges to view the evidence in a particular way that is in the employee's best interest, as opposed to under federal law, which is a lot more sort of conservative and difficult to get a case to survive all the way to trial. New York City statute is terrific, and it also provides for uncapped punitive damages and attorney's fees. It's a very powerful law. So you check in your own city, and depending upon, of course, where your city is and how large your city is, they may have a law that covers you And we know that there are folks out there that have sort of missed the boat, if you will. They didn't know that they had a city law when they thought they only had a federal law, and they then were not able to file a claim until it was then too late. So you want to check out, it's where you work. That's what's important. It's not about, it's your jurisdiction, where you work, not where you live, where you work. So if you live in one state and work in another, and the discrimination is taking place in that state, that's where you would arguably bring a claim, and that's where you need to know what the laws provide. But the most common, people talk about maternity leave, and they synonymously reference the FMLA. The FMLA stands for the Family and Medical Leave Act, which was legislated, enacted in 1993. And it was a terrific step in the right direction, because prior to that, companies were constantly just letting women go, i.e. firing them when they left to have a baby. There was no guaranteed right to return to work after having a child. So, you know, so much for our country's family values and walking the talk when we talk about those things, particularly conservatives. You know, our Republican friends are always talking about, you know, family values, and, you know, we need to get back to conventional and take care of the nuclear unit and all of that. Well, they do nothing to help that happen, because in most countries, in fact, in all of the rest of the industrialized world, except for the United States, the other 33 OECD DC countries all have paid maternity leave. We don't even have. First of all, it's the FMLA is unpaid, and it doesn't apply to at least half of our workforce in the United States, because it requires your employer, first of all, have 50 employees. I mentioned earlier the federal law that just protects you with regard to your pregnancy and your sex and other categories requires 15. Family Medical Leave Act requires 50. Also, it requires, and this is the only law that has this type of requirement, that you have worked at your company, that you would have worked a whole year, 12 months, for your company before your baby's born. So if you're pregnant and you work for a company and you've only been there 11 months when your water breaks and you deliver your baby, you're not protected by the Family Medical Leave Act. And if you are, in fact, ultimately covered by the FMLA because you work for a large employer with over 50 employees and you've been there for at least a year, what you get is 12 weeks to have your baby or to adopt a child. And that's what you get, 12 weeks per year. And during that time, you cannot be fired or demoted or otherwise harassed or messed with, and they need to bring you back to that job. But it's completely unpaid. So, you know, we have a long way to go in this country. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about that we hear with sort of increasing frequency, and it's something very important to keep your eye on, either for yourself or a loved one, many employers use the FMLA as a sort of as a sword against employees, while they're sort of telling them that this is their right. You know, they're explaining the law, and as they explain it, they use it to trick them, fool them into resigning. Let me explain. If you work for a company, and like the scenario I just gave before, where you've only been there, you know, you say to your human resource or your benefits in your company, you send them an email and you say, I'm pregnant. My husband and I are so thrilled. You know, just couldn't wait to tell you. I'm due, and my baby's due in August of this year, and I just wanted to know what the policy is. You know, let everybody know and just kind of get ready. And what is this the company's policy with regard to maternity leave? And the company brings you into the HR office, and they say, oh, congratulations, that's wonderful. Did you pick out any baby names yet? You know, and they start schmoozing and talking about their own children, yada, yada, yada. And then the HR woman says to you, now, when did you say this baby's due again? August 13th, give or take 2 weeks. And when did you start working here? And they look it up on, she looks it up on her desktop and says, you know what, there's a slight little problem here. If this baby is born on time, you're not going to have been here 12 months when that happens. And that's a bit of an issue. And you say, well, please explain, what's the issue? Well, the Family Medical Leave Act says that you need to have worked here for at least 12 months prior to your baby being born, and that we have 50 employees. Well, we have 50 employees, but you haven't worked here for a year. That's a problem. And you say, well, I've heard you say that, but what does that mean? Well, it means, and again, this isn't our fault. We love children, and we love you. write to your congressperson. Google this. It's not our problem, but you're not entitled to FMLA leave. What are we supposed to do? You're not entitled to it. If the law says you're not entitled to it, we don't have to give it to you. And we're not going to give it to you. Well, again, what does that really mean? Are you saying that I don't have any, I can't take maternity leave? Well, says the perhaps well-meaning or deceiving HR person, well, how many days of vacation or sick time do you have accrued? And you say, well, I've been here for 10, 11 months. I don't think it could be too much. And she looks it up and says, you're right. You have 4 days. You have 4 sick days or 4 vacation days. Are you going to be able to have this baby and in 4 days be able to get back to work? It's a rhetorical question. The answer is obviously, of course not. Well, then I don't see what else you could do other than be absent without leave. You'll be AWOL if you're out. You don't have anything. You're not sick. You had a baby. You don't have time. You don't have the FMLA. I guess you'll just have to resign.
And on day 5, we'll consider that you've abandoned your job.
Exactly. And when you're ready to come back, because as we say, we love you. We love you. When you're feeling ready to come back, baby's 3 months old, you've got daycare all hooked up, give us a shout. And we'll see what we've got available then. And again, break a leg, good everything. I hope it all turns out great. Good luck. That scenario, I mean, we as one small plaintiff's employment law firm have seen that time and time again. It has picked up its pace in the last few years following the Great Recession, following the Supreme Court's obscene decision in Citizens United versus FEC, where the majority of the court, the 5 crazy people on our highest court, found that corporations are people and money is speech. So corporations have gotten particularly arrogant and powerful in our expanding corporatocracy or, profitocracy that we live in. And so they've gotten a little sort of carried away with themselves. And if they can get away with, and they do, fooling women into resigning, they do that because, again, they're not enamored of they could care less about your pregnancy and your maternity leave, which isn't going to do the company's bottom line any good. So, and when that happens, that women do sort of take the bait and kind of just walk away and say, okay, what are they going to do? They told me, I Googled it, FMLA, I'm not qualified, what a bummer. Not only did they just walk away from their job and they were subverted and fooled into giving up their gainful employment, but then they can't even apply. They won't qualify for unemployment benefits. How's that for a kick in the pants? Because they've just quit. They voluntarily abandon their position without good cause, as the various departments of labor would say, and so therefore you're not even going to get enough to, keep your lights on, perhaps, until you can find another job. So it's a terrible situation out there in this country for, working women who unless you're fortunate enough to have a company that is sensitive, and typically women at higher level positions, are able to have children and come back to work, but a lot of the time, on the sort of lower spectrum of working women in the what we call and others call the sort of the pink ghetto, jobs that are typically defined working women, dominate, and they're fairly low paid and there are a few benefits. It's a terrible situation. It's you're as good as your last day that you worked, and no one is. Your employer may not be particularly compassionate or flexible about your pregnancy. What can you expect?
Just going to say, so Jack, what can I do?
Well, first of all, here's the deal. If that does happen to you, understand they're lying, because even if your company doesn't have 50 employees, even if you haven't worked there a year, you could have worked there 3 days and tell them you're pregnant, you're covered. It doesn't matter, as long as you're an employee. In fact, we have a case right now where our client was offered a job, and then they retracted the job offer when they realized she was pregnant. That's a claim as well. That's certainly a viable case. Clearly, they retracted her offer when they learned she was pregnant, and there's some proof of that, and that is, a problem for the company that did that. Let me say this. Under federal law, let's assume right now your company has the requisite number of employees, either 15 under federal law or however many under your state law, but there's enough employees to have to be covered under one of the so-called human rights laws, the anti-discrimination statutes. What's very important for us all to understand is this, is that while the law says you basically have no right at work to anything that looks democratic or to be treated wonderfully or fairly or any of that, it does say the laws that apply, like the federal and the state and the city laws, the anti-discrimination statutes, that your employer cannot treat you differently than other people who work for the company do not fall under that same category that you're identifying with. So for today's show, let's keep it at pregnancy. And of course, if it's pregnancy, we're also talking about the fact that you're a woman. If you feel that you are being treated differently, that, you know what, ever since they see that I'm with child, ever since I've started showing, ever since I told them I was pregnant, ever since I needed to go to the doctor with some frequency because of my high-risk pregnancy, they're messing with me. They say things to me that make me feel bad. I feel that this is discriminatory. What we have to do as employees, and you need to understand this, is the law requires that we complain, that we notify the company, not the particular individual knucklehead, perhaps, who's giving you a hard time because he or she may be nobody in the grand scheme of things. And you can't sue him or her anyway, the individual knucklehead, at least under federal law. It's all about the corporate entity. It's about the company. So your company needs to be put on notice. They need to be told that I feel, and it doesn't have to be anything threatening. In fact, it shouldn't be. It should be an elegant and, you know, sort of well-written and honest and thoughtful letter just from you, not copied to a lawyer, not using any legalese, but saying to your employer, to, you know, whomever, the human resource director or the president of the company, it doesn't matter, but someone high up in authority, a principal, that, you know what, I'm afraid I have to tell you that I believe I'm being treated differently. I'm being discriminated against. Discrimination, differential treatment, disparate treatment, or disparate, some people pronounce it as, they're all synonyms, it's all the same. I'm being discriminated against at workplace because ever since I told Billy and Jane, you know, that I'm pregnant, these are the things they've said and done that make me feel, you know, diminished, that make me feel like I'm no longer in the email chain, I wasn't invited to the seminar, whatever it is, you're putting them on notice that this is an issue. And you know what that is when you do that? That is a civil rights complaint. That is your Rosa Parks moment, right? That's your line in the sand. That's like saying, as Rosa Parks said on that fateful day when she said, you know what, I'm just not going to the back of the bus. It's not happening today. Was it easy for her? No. Was she dragged off the bus and arrested? Sure. Was it a problem for many, many months and years to come for her? Yes. Did it spark the civil rights movement? Yes, it did also. Your chance at work to take care of yourself and your unborn child, so she'll have a mother who's still employed, is to just let your company know in writing, okay? Because if it's verbal, if you do this at the water cooler, it's a problem because, well, guess what? They're going to deny it. And anything, the first thing you learn in law school is if it's not in writing, it doesn't exist. You can't prove it. They're going to deny it. They're going to say you're lying through your teeth. It's all about the paper trail. You could talk to people like a human being, too, but you also just want to make sure you send some type of a writing that you could prove that was received that just says, you know, listen, this is a problem for me, and I feel that, you know, when so-and-so said, how many more of those rugrats are you going to have, or are you going to have any more babies, or, my God, how long are you going to be out, or you never seem to be here anymore, or whatever, that you believe that this is differential treatment as a result of your pregnancy, you need to let your company know. Why? Because what the law says, all of the laws, the federal law, the analog state and city laws say that the company then, when they hear, I believe I'm being treated differently, and fill in the blank for any reason why, as long as it's protected. It's not like my boss treats me differently because he says he hates the neckwear I choose every day. Well, you know what? They could fire you for wearing ugly ties, I'm afraid. But they can treat you differently because you're a woman who's dealing with gestational issues. And once you put them, or because you're a person of color, because you're Romanian, again, any of the so-called protected categories, and once you complain, the company is obligated to investigate your complaint immediately and to launch corrective action or remedial action if indicated once they do that investigation. And they all take it seriously. Anyone who's taken Human Resources 101 understands that the first thing you do when someone makes a complaint that smacks of discrimination of any kind, and I'm not saying you do this lightly, you do this when you realize, you know what, I'm on a downhill slide, and all my interpersonal finesse, all my sitting down having a cup of coffee with my boss, it's just not changing this. You now let the company know, and now they are on actual notice of this, and they have to do something about it. What they can't do, the only thing they cannot do, your corporation, your company, is to treat you worse as a direct result of your complaint, which people always fear, right? If I complain to the company that my boss hit on me,
that's right? What I was just going to say. When I go through, you need formal notification. I am afraid. I was afraid to say anything because they're already treating me so awful.
Right.
I was afraid if they fire me now, who's hiring me at 6 months pregnant?
Exactly. Nobody, actually.
And that's when I will then say, well, then you really have nothing to lose because the other reason that the other formal notification does is it cloaks you, as you say, it cloaks you under those laws to protect you. So
right.
If they do fire you or they do treat you even worse, that's a stronger case than your first.
Exactly. Well, that's that. Then you have this that paper trail, and they're sort of aware of that. That's why when they get that eloquent missive.
Yeah, but eloquent, but very simple.
Simple.
Like you don't
right.
want to, and I. This is just one
right.
thing I see all the time, is by the time someone is complaining, they have logs, they've got paper, they've got notes, they have pages and pages of complaints. And what ends up happening is, and I see it tends to be more women, but they'll write a single-spaced letter, a three-page single-spaced letter to HR with all their complaints.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is HR does not read, so their complaint gets lost.
Mm-hmm.
So that formal notification is very, very simple. It's a few sentences.
Right.
So that it, the highlight, that it is very clear, I feel I'm being discriminated against. And you may list one or two things, and the
right.
purpose being...
Well, the purpose being, again, is to put them on notice so that they
right.
fix it for you. That's why you don't even really have to use the word discrimination. If you said, you know what, ever since I told Bob I'm pregnant, this is what he's been doing to me, you know, that they'll get it. That's the point. Or ever since I came out and said that I'm transitioning into a different gender, or that I'm gay, or ever since I, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter. As long as it's some sort of protected status or so-called activity, a disability leave, any kind of, if you're sick, if you're out for any period of time, except for a particularly protracted period of time, the company has to take that under advisement and decide how they're going to deal with you, but you have to keep a record of this so you don't give them a chance to make up a reason why they're perhaps unhappy with you that is, you know, conveniently timed after you just told them you were pregnant, but then there's no record that you told them that you were pregnant, and that's a problem. So you just simply want to nip it in the bud and let the employer, you know, investigate what you're saying and see what they do. Sometimes, occasionally, the employer does the right thing.
Because the employer does the right thing, because to the distinction that you were making before, the company, the employer, may really want to do the right thing. They don't realize that they have a manager
right.
in the
exactly.
Brooklyn office
exactly.
who's a racist or who's this or who's that. And that's the importance of letting the employer, who is responsible, know what's going on in this branch, in this office, in this place, so that they can be aware, investigate, and take corrective action.
Exactly.
Because the point of saying, of the point of doing this, is not because you're afraid of being fired or all of this other stuff. You just want to let somebody know so that, give them the benefit of the doubt, that they'll fix this, that this is not their intention.
But you're doing it to protect your job.
Well, exactly. But that, you know, this one particular manager.
Right. But So the reason you do it, if this, and as Deborah said, if you write a letter to your HR department, whether they're in your building or in another state, they're then obligated to get right on it. They've got to suit up and saddle up and deal with it, because they understand what you're saying. They do understand that there's a whole lot of exposure. These laws could cost them a lot of money in their own attorney's fees to defend these cases. So they kind of get it when somebody just says very sort of gently, here's an issue that's coming up. I'm sending up a flare. Most HR departments get it. In fact, they typically meet with you the moment you send them any kind of a letter that just sort of implicates a discrimination issue. They meet with you. They say, thank you for the letter. We're an equal opportunity employer. We take claims like this very seriously. We're going to interview you. We're going to keep it confidential. We won't retaliate, et cetera, et cetera. They may not mean it, but they are saying it because they know they have to. And, of course, what you need to do is simply watch what they do. Hold their feet to the fire. How do you do that? HR will meet with you. They'll ask you questions about what you wrote in this letter, and you'll say, excuse me, yes, Jimmy, Bob, Ellen made a couple of comments to me about my pregnancy. I noticed that I'm no longer on the bowling team, that I no longer get the lists of the better calls, that I was disinvited to something, whatever it is in your unique situation. It's just something that's troubling you, and it seems to be getting worse. They will then question you all about it, and they'll look into it. And if they come back and they say to you, you know what, 2 weeks later, and during this period of time, what you need to understand is that's when you're particularly protected, because all the laws, Title VII, the Civil Rights Act, as I mentioned, the federal law, the state analog human rights law statutes like we have here in New York and you likely have in your state, those laws have two parts. Here's what they are, and they're pretty much the same. Part A says, in effect, I'm paraphrasing wildly, you have no rights. You have no rights at the workplace at all. Again, we're the boss, it's our business, you do what we tell you. But you do have one right that's kind of cut into different parts, which is the right for us not to treat you differently than everybody else in the workplace who is similar to you because we're messing with you because, again, of your race, color, ethnicity, national origin, age, religion, disability, sex, sexual orientation, etc. When you say to the employer, so that's part A. Part B is when an employee feels that she is being discriminated against, treated differently, suffering some challenge at work as a result of her pregnancy and her, of course, her sex, she must give the employer the chance. It's like a fairness thing. You got to give your employer the chance to fix it because, again, as Deborah said before, maybe it's some schmendrick, some knucklehead that they'd want to fire for treating you this way. It's possible. So you give them a chance to fix it. When they do that, occasionally it happens. They come in, they interview, they realize, you know what, he probably was inappropriate with you and made a sexual remark. He admitted this. Maybe you have some proof, maybe you have a witness. And they fire him, demote him, apologize to you. You just fix the whole thing. Plus, you've got an extra level of protection because during the period of time, while they were investigating it, you're the last person, despite what you think, you're the last person that any employer that has a brain in its collective head or speaking to an attorney, they're not firing you because they know that what will that look like? Backlash. There's a name for that. There's a legal word for backlash after you complain of discrimination. It's called retaliation under the laws. That is Part B, federal and state law. It says if your employer subjects you to backlash because you said your boss is hitting on you every day, you're not really, you know, your boss, he may be a rainmaker for the company and more important to the company than you because he makes all this money and you're nobody to them, and they know he's been sexually harassing people for the last 20 years. Well, you know what? When you put that in writing, when you complain about him, yeah, they don't want it. They'd rather fire you than him, but they have a problem. What are they going to do about it? And so during that period of time, if they fire you on the heels of your provably sent letter, well, number one, if that happens, there's not a whole lot you could have done about it because you were saying before you were suffering, and who wants to work under a situation where you're discriminated against, either because of your pregnancy or because you're being sexually harassed? That's untenable. Your hair will fall out from that stress after a while, and that's working in an unequal, in a diminished state that is illegal and is unacceptable. So once you complain, well, you're not going to get fired because they know that, you know what, that firing is going to look brazenly retaliatory and you're going to have a case. You'll have a case that lawyers will line up to bring on your behalf. So during the period of time, you actually are the last person they'd fire. Even if they had to fire 400 people in a reduction in force because they were doing so poorly, they'd keep you for the time being. And if they then find in your favor, so to speak, and, you know, fire the perpetrator and apologize to you, well, then you've just won a real big victory, and maybe, and sometimes that does happen. But if it doesn't happen, and if they realize, if they think to themselves, you know what, this chick is complaining too much, and that's me playing devil's advocate and talking how the company might think. You know, she's complaining, and she's complaining about something. She's trying to change our culture at gunpoint. We're not going to go along with it, so we're going to treat her worse as a result. We're going to fire her. Well, so they put you out of your misery, at least, and you'll have a claim, because you will have that paper trail that shows that you told them that there was an issue. No? Hello? This is Jack. Okay, am I on? Excuse me. So you will have a claim that you that you notified your company that there was a civil rights violation going on, that you feel you're being treated differently because of your pregnancy, and that they, as a result of that, it got worse. You were fired or demoted, or, you know, they start now messing with you because they think you're a time bomb and you're threatening them and you're, you know, you're the black sheep in the family and all that. Well, you know what? If it's already gone, but if it's that bad, then that will give you the leverage, whether you have to end up filing a complaint with an administrative agency or you just call a competent local employment lawyer in your area. That'll allow you perhaps to leave your employer. If you're still working and they haven't fired you, but they're making it very difficult, or let's say you're out on maternity leave now, but you had been complaining and you know what? They don't want you back and you don't want to come back to this. I can't tell you, many of our cases, that's exactly what happens. By the time they get to their maternity leave, they're thinking, you know what? This marriage can't be saved. And I'm referring to the marriage, of course, between the employee and their employer. The differences are irreconcilable. They really hurt me. They betrayed me the way they made me feel at a time I was supposed to be joyous during my pregnancy, have my oxytocin start racing through my system. Instead, I got cortisol and I'm stressed and I'm not gaining weight. How terrible is that? I don't want to go back to these people. Well, they don't want you back either. But you have leverage. What do you have leverage for? To negotiate a severance package. If it came to that, then you're in a position to say, you know what? I won't come back. But you're going to pay me something, whether it's before your maternity leave or after, you're going to pay me. You're not getting rich from this. But you're going to pay me something that teaches you a lesson, that teaches the perpetrators lessons, that allows me to have a buffer before, you know, have some money in my bank account before I find another job, that allows me to collect unemployment. And I feel like I at least have a story to tell my child one day when he or she's old enough to hear it, that, you know what, when mommy was pregnant with you, in addition to gaining 50 pounds and getting varicose veins and all the things, you know, and having to stop my favorite things and not exercise or whatever that only women have to deal with, mommy also lost her job behind this pregnancy, you know, to bring you into the world. But you know what? Instead of just walking, going quietly to her rest, or just giving up like many people do, what mommy did is she stood up for herself. This is what we do in this family. This is bringing up a little feminist, somebody mm-hmm. who stands up for themselves. Right. We pushed back. We hired an attorney. And you know, we taught this company a lesson. So they probably won't try to fool the next employee into resigning, thinking she has no rights.
Right.
Because for the most part, as a woman, for the most part, again, if you work for a company that has a certain number of employees, and again, I'll speak for at least, you know, 4 employees in most states, where some states are 8 employees, and again, under federal law, 15. But you are entitled to some leave to have a baby no matter what they say. Why? Because after you have a baby, whether it's a cesarean section or a vaginal delivery, after you have a baby, you're disabled. That's what this is about. You're temporarily disabled. Clearly, right? You're not going, but you're going back to work a week after you have a baby? No. How much time do you need? Well, in civilized nations, and from those of us and under the FMLA, we are allowed 3 months. That's a fairly, to most of us who have had babies or have studied the issues, 3 months is probably a minimum that you should have to be bonding and, you know, weaning and doing the things you need to do to successfully, before you're allowed, you need to go back to work. 3 months is a minimum. But not everyone gets 3 months. And under many state disability laws, 4 to 6 weeks is considered enough, meaning that, at least in terms of getting paid, some disability pay, if you had a straight, somewhat easy vaginal delivery, it might be that you're only getting 4 weeks of disability pay, and your employer, a very small employer, might say, I'd like to see you back here in 4 to 6 weeks, and that's also sort of negotiable, and probably we'll talk about that on some other show.
Before you go off on that, I just want to go back to one thing that you said that is really, really important. And you were referencing, you know, filing a complaint either with EEOC or some state or city agency, and the importance of oftentimes, and this is something I will speak to about people who call, oftentimes when people feel harmed or wronged or hurt at their job, they're looking for justice. They're looking for somebody to help them.
Right.
And they go running off and they file. How they pick these, where they're going to file, I think it has to do with so-and-so told them, or this is what my father said, or this is somebody told me. And the importance to know where and when you file can impact your future options.
Right.
And you can speak to that a little more specifically. But one of the important things to know is, so you really want to try and consult, either do some research for your own particular state and circumstance as to where you should file, or consult with an employment attorney. But oftentimes when people call even our office, a guy today, you know, he felt he was being discriminated against based on his nationality, and he had documents. He's tried to contact HR. Nobody's listening to him. He went and filed with EEOC. Now, for us to get involved, oftentimes if we write that demand letter to say we believe our client's claims of discrimination, oftentimes the employer will say, well, you know what? He filed with the EEOC. They filed with Human Rights. They filed with City Commission. Let's just wait and see what their finding is. That could be adding months and months of unnecessary time and aggravation and continued.
Well, also, you're making decisions that might be the wrong decision. If you don't know what to, you know, if you file with a certain agency, it may be a sort of an irrevocable or, you know, decision that then disallows court action. There are a lot of potential challenges, is why going off just sort of half-cocked to say, you know what, my boss really PO'd me today, and I'm going to go file with my local. Most states have a local administrative agency. It's not, you don't get jury trials. It's for sort of limited damages, and they have about a 95% usually dismissal rate, you know, meaning they, most of the time, most of these agencies fine for employers. The best leverage is, of course, to at least threaten or not go to court, but they're often mutually exclusive. So what Deborah is saying is when you or a family member say, I'm filing with the EEOC, well, the EEOC does very little for us as an actual, it's not coming in on a white horse and rescuing you. We use it for leverage, and we'll talk about probably another time, we just have a few minutes left today, on how to use that. But try to restrain yourself or restrain a loved one. Talk to a lawyer first. And who you're talking to, you know, and even again, in these days with, you know, with this, everything is digital, if in your town or city there isn't a plaintiff's employment lawyer, a lawyer who represents workers who specializes in that, you don't want to go to, you know, the local real estate lawyer or general practitioner, because he or she won't know what they're doing. It's a specialty. If you don't have someone local, call someone who's not local. You know, many of us, our firm takes cases that are in different states. You know, it's sort of, doesn't really need to be, you know, I have to have a lawyer who I can walk and visit him downtown, and because there are plenty of places that do not have, you will not
especially
find.
Especially for pregnancy, I would say 85% of our consultations are on the phone because they're pregnant, or they have a little baby, they don't want to schlep.
Right.
You know, you should just give the website with regard to pregnancy discrimination. Jack has published a guide, everything that you want to know about pregnancy discrimination, what is it, what to do. You can download this for free. It's available for sale on Amazon, but you can go on our website and download this book for free at womensrightsny.com. And in the upper right corner, you'll see Women's Rights in the Workplace, A Guide to Pregnancy Discrimination. We lay out everything, pretty much everything that we spoke about today is in a step-by-step guide to help you through this process. it doesn't mean you shouldn't maybe try and find an attorney if you really feel things are, you know, hitting the fan. But this is a good guide, and it's free on our site.
Nicely done. A little plug. Thank you.
Well, it's really good, and it's
very
free.
Very helpful, and it's free. Absolutely. Thank you. So we have, I was just told, just a few minutes left. Is there anything we should do to sort of tie this up with a pretty pink bow today? Yes, I'm getting the two-minute warning from our engineer.
Oh, God. Now I have nothing to say.
Of course. Right. Well, again, I'll say this as a wrap-up, is just sort of general, and whether it's a gender issue, a pregnancy issue, or any kind of discrimination issue. It's really, you need to stay alert at work and understand this, basically. If you're in a position where there is something about, you know, if your job is just crummy and you know, and it's not working out, well, do what you can to find another job and you could ride off into the sunset. But if there's an issue that implicates something about you, and again, mostly what our firm concentrates on gender issues, gender pay disparity, equal pay, sexual harassment that's still...
You know, disability is a huge category. I mean, pregnancy mm-hmm, falls mm-hmm, under mm-hmm, that as mm-hmm, well. Mm-hmm. But people who get sick and get fired
right.
just because they got sick or they got hurt
right.
and they're out for a little bit. So,
and here we are in a culture that basically doesn't have paid, that doesn't pay.
Exactly.
So throughout much of our culture.
You know, the last thing I would say, the most important thing is when people call and they're in shock, they're stunned that they have no rights. I mean, you know, unless there is something that we can help them with. Pay attention to who you vote for, because it is the politicians who are writing the laws that are protecting employers. And we no longer have collective bargaining is being ripped to shreds. Employees, this is what we need, is better employee laws and protections.
Yes.
I mean, to me, that's really at the bottom.
Right. Well, we'll be dealing with this in other shows, but the
yeah.
fact that there used to be, even when Deborah and I were still alive, you know, and in this country during our lifetimes, there was 40% of the private sector, close to 40% were union jobs with union pay and benefits. Collective bargaining, sort of democracy within the workplace, which is what unions represent.
And what that did was it elevated
everyone.
It lifted everyone's
boat.
And as union.
Well, that's why in the. Exactly. And today, it's less than 5% of private sector workers are unionized. So,
and even at that, the unions have so little power these days.
All right, so
but anyway.
I believe we have to wrap it up for today. It was wonderful being with you, Jack Tuckner and Deborah Worrell, in our Women's Rights in the Workplace premiere show. And we'll be here each Monday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and waiting for your calls and discussing issues that may be vitally important to you. It was an honor, it was a privilege being with you today. Signing off.
Doesn't it seem such a chance to take? Doesn't it seem most broken?